Well, dear friends, here we are again. Many years ago, when I was a medical student, I had the opportunity to work as the family doctor to a military regiment in Libya. When I was asked to do this, I said, "But I'm only a medical student." And the reply was, "Don't worry, it's only general practice, it's largely common sense." Now, I have spent the last 20 years as a residency program director in Liverpool, looking after some 450 residents in family medicine. And my college, the Royal College of General Practitioners in London, has spent the last 50 years trying to make education for family doctors a central part of the health system in the United Kingdom. So what I'm going to say in the next few minutes is to describe to you what is happening in the United Kingdom and how we work, but I want you to know that it is difficult. It has taken us half a century to get there, and now we are there. We are fighting constantly to keep the gains that we have made. I'm going to talk about briefly about undergraduate education, about what we call generic postgraduate education. That may not mean much to you, but in the United Kingdom, all doctors now spend 2 years doing general postgraduate education after they qualify, before they are allowed to go into a specialist training scheme. Specialist postgraduate training for general practice, for family medicine, and continuing professional development. And the key messages are that family medicine is not simply a collection of specialties. It is a distinct specialty in its own right, with its own academic base. I believe very strongly that family medicine has to be taught by family doctors. I believe that all doctors need to understand what happens to their patients in the community. There are people who believe that you can train family doctors only in family medicine, but hospital gives you the opportunity of seeing individual specialties in a concentrated way. If you want to teach a family doctor about painful red eyes, you might wait some time in general practice before you see a suitable case, but in the eye clinic, you will see 20 cases in a morning. So there is a strong case for spending at least some of the time in hospital. Family medicine trainers, the people who look after family medicine specialists in their practices, need to be trained for the purpose, supported heavily, and if possible, paid. We have learned the hard way that if you do not pay, you get very little in the way of formal training. And finally, that the specialty, family medicine, needs a range of what we call faculty. In other words, it needs university departments, it needs professors, it needs other people taking the profession forward. Undergraduate students need to understand that what they see in hospital is not the same as what we see in the community. We see early and disorganized presentations. We see long-term care. we see multiple morbidity, which in hospitals is absolutely difficult to deal with. And we deal with prevention and screening. A good experience in primary care is essential for recruitment to the profession. And we have found to our cost that if you put students with disaffected, unhappy family doctors, even those students who wanted to be family doctors are likely to change their minds. So you have to pick the people carefully. In Liverpool, and this is an extreme example, 30% of all undergraduate time in the university is spent in the community. 30%. Now, this is the biggest proportion in England, but takes a massive effort to support. Now, if we look at what I was talking about before, generic postgraduate education, over half of all doctors in England spend at least 4 months in general practice in their first two postgraduate years. Whatever they want to be, whether they want to be neurosurgeons or cardiothoracic surgeons or pathologists, they spend 4 months in general practice. Not watching, but doing. Learning how the specialty works. And we believe it's especially important for those people who actually are not coming into general practice, but choosing a hospital career. As far as specialist education is concerned, we have come to realize that you need to be rigorous in your selection of family doctor trainees. If you make it easy, they don't come. If you make it difficult, they realize that it is a worthwhile job to do, and you get more recruits. This is our experience. We have a 3-year full-time program, which is the European Union requirement, and we have recently moved from 2 years in hospital and 1 year in general practice to half and half, 18 months in each. We have general practitioners who are selected, trained for the purpose. It takes them over a year to be trained to do this work. And we pay them. And every 3 years, we reselect them in a rigorous way to continue to look after these young trainees. Throughout the training, the educational supervision of GP trainees, of residents, is by general practitioners. Even when they're working in hospital, their educational supervision is by GPs. The hospital doctors look after their clinical supervision, but we look after the education. The curriculum was written by GPs, and I was going to wave the Royal College's curriculum book at you, but like a lot of other things, it's still in Amsterdam, but I'll perhaps bring it tomorrow and show you. And we also set and mark the end point examination, which gives entry into family medicine for these trainees. So I'll just say quickly something about each of those bits. The selection is designed to see whether these doctors are going to be able to benefit from the education we provide and are likely to meet the end point standards. We have found to our cost that if you don't select rigorously, you end up with a lot of failures at the end. So we have an initial multiple choice exam which rejects the bottom outliers, usually people who haven't trained in the United Kingdom, from continuing with training. We run selection centers which are national in their methodology but run by people like me, in our own regions. We have simulated patients and written and group exercises, and we reject 30% of all the applicants who wish to train. We take in something over 3,000 applicants a year in England. So we have at any one time 9,000 family medicine residents in England in training. And as I said before, in Liverpool we have 150 at a time in each year. Now the program, there are many variations, but this is a typical program which you can read. 6 months in general practice at the beginning, hospital posts in the middle, and 12 months in general practice at the end. All the variations have 12 months in general practice at the end. We may substitute other specialties, but certainly we try and make sure everybody does internal medicine and pediatrics. Now, the curriculum is developed by the Royal College, and although it's approved by the General Medical Council in England, the same as all the other specialty curricula, it was entirely written by GPs. It's a formal written document, and all trainees have access to this with electronic portfolios of learning, which they all register for as soon as they start training. At the end, and this is the thing that's taken us 50 years, they now must all pass the MRCGP examination. Up until 2007, this was voluntary, and although a lot of people did, a lot of people didn't. But now it is compulsory. They have an applied knowledge test, which is a computerized multiple choice test. They have a consultation skills assessment with simulated patients at our own centre in South London. And throughout the 3 years, they keep workplace-based diaries electronically, mixtures of reflection and feedback, which is assessed by GP deans, people like me. And if they fail after 3 attempts, they get 6 more months of training, and if they still fail, then we simply say to them, I'm sorry, general practice family medicine is not the specialty for you. I'm afraid you're going to have to find something else. Now that's very different from where we started, where people who failed in other specialties ended up in general practice. Now we're not quite sure where they go. We think they go to public health, but some go to things like sexually transmitted diseases and other specialties which are not popular. But we, because we work independently in the community, using our eyes and ears and brains, you have to be appropriately trained, otherwise you can't do the job. Now, once you've got there, continual professional development is the game. It must be based on practice reflection and audit and understanding, and it must deliver improvements in practice. There's been a great tendency to have programs where people go to very interesting lectures given by very amusing people who teach them nothing that is helpful in their day-to-day practice. That is not what we want to see. They're based on annual personal development plans, and we have a credit-based system like everybody else does, but we have abandoned our payment for it, which we used to give. We used to give people money for doing this. We now regard this as a professional requirement. We have an electronic system of CPD, if people are interested in that, but not everybody takes that up. And in the future in the United Kingdom, doctors, all doctors, will be revalidated. You will not be able to continue practice forever on your original qualification, but on a 5-yearly basis, you will have to show that you are still up to date and practicing in an appropriate manner, and part of that will be demonstrating your continual professional development activities. And then finally, just a word about faculty. We are now in a position, and it's taken us a long time, that every medical school in the United Kingdom has a professor of general practice, at least one, and staff. And every medical school also has a postgraduate department with a GP dean, which is what I did for a living for 20 years, who has associates, who has program directors who teach groups of trainees in the locality, and who has trainers who teach and supervise people in their practices on a one-to-one basis. Now, you will see that if you have 450 residents out there and you have a medical school that takes on board 300 undergraduates a year and 30% of their teaching is done by general practitioners, and half the people in the generic years are taught by general practitioners, you need an awful lot of general practitioners out there who are prepared to do this work, even if you pay for it, and give up clinical time and fit educational things into their clinical time if you're going to make this work. And it's very hard. There are lots of people want to do it, but it's hard work. The days when trainers just said, right, you sit and watch me and you'll learn a lot, have gone. We require them to be professional educators in their role, and this takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time filling in their educational portfolios, in assessing them, in writing reports, and in properly organizing their education. And we also, in the faculty, provide a range of formal courses for things which it's not easy to learn on a day-to-day basis in the practice. So I'm not going to tell you that this is the only way of doing things, but it might be something, in part, that you want to aspire to, but don't think this is going to happen tomorrow. Don't be like the Chinese. Last time I went to Shanghai, they said, we have a policy that we want to have family doctors. And I said, how many do you want? And they said, well, we'd like to start with 150,000. And we said, when do you want them by? And they said, well, January would be nice. So we said, well, how on earth are you going to do that? And they said, oh, we've got a training program. We're going to train them all for 40 hours. Not 3 years, not 5 years, but 40 hours. It then became really quite difficult to continue with the conversation. But you can see the problem we face. So that's where we're up to. It's not where everyone else is up to. But you have to have a target, a horizon to aim at. And that's where we're at. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.